This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by a very special guest. We have Katie Keith with us. Katie is a health law professor at Georgetown University and a remarkable thinker. Katie's going to talk to us about the impact of the election, the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg on healthcare reform and healthcare issues. We try at Becker's Healthcare to be as nonpartisan as possible. Katie probably comes to us a little bit from the liberal or progressive side of the equation. So just for our listeners and so forth, just to make sure you're aware of that. Katie, do you mind taking a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure, and thank you so much for having me. I can't think of a better time to be having a discussion like this. So I'm Katie Keith. I'm a professor. I teach health law courses on the Affordable Care Act, as well as LGBT health law and policy at Georgetown University at the law school. I also maintain a part-time appointment at the Georgetown Center on Health Insurance Reforms. So have spent many years now studying implementation of the Affordable Care Act, watching what states do, what the federal government does, and for the past few years now, I have frankly had the honor and delight to write the Following the ACA blog for Health Affairs, which means I'm, you know, it's the pleasure of tracking every little thing that happens with the Affordable Care Act, whether it is new regulations, new legislation in Congress, sometimes what the states are doing, as well as litigation. And what I frankly find myself spending most of my time on these days is court cases about the Affordable Care Act.
Thank you. And for people that don't know you, you're literally a brilliant thinker and a pleasure to visit with. Take a moment and talk to us about the impact of Ruth Bader Ginsburg passing on healthcare and what impacts that can have on healthcare.
It's a terrific question. I think it has a huge impact. And, you know, there is sort of this big looming elephant in the room case about the entire future of the Affordable Care Act, known as California versus Texas. That case will be heard by the Supreme Court on November 10th. And I think the loss of Justice Ginsburg has huge implications there. I think it, frankly, it just means you need two conservative justices to vote in favor of upholding the ACA. And, you know, that could be a challenge. We'll see. I think we'll know a little bit more on November 10th after oral argument. But the court regularly decides all kinds of healthcare issues. So even today, on October 6th at least, the court heard a challenge called Rutledge versus PCMA over whether states can regulate pharmacy benefit managers or if that is preempted under ERISA. So key sort of health policy questions there. And then for folks keeping an eye on the court, there is a request or two requests at this point now for the Supreme Court to hear a challenge over the validity of Medicaid work requirement waivers that the Trump administration has approved, as well as changes to the Title 10 program called the Domestic Gag Rule. Both, you know, the parties there have asked the Supreme Court to take those cases up. So if they do, you could really see, you know, a dramatic kind of health policy term for the Supreme Court if they're weighing in on the entire fate of the ACA, definitely ERISA preemption over pharmacy benefit managers or not, and then potentially Medicaid work requirements and, you know, whether states have to fund clinics that offer abortion services or not. So many, many issues there, all of which I think is affected by the fact that Justice Ginsburg is no longer there.
And some of those more affected by a partisan split than others, I would assume. Like the, right. The ERISA preemption, maybe a little bit less partisan, mm-hmm. but some partisanship to it. But the issues on the ACA, quite partisan. If you're looking at this and would like to see the ACA upheld, who are the two of the five or so conservative justices that you think you have, that there might be a shot at voting to uphold the ACA versus throwing it out entirely? And it wouldn't get thrown out entirely here. It goes back to the appellate court.
It could be any of the above, which is what makes this case, I think, so complicated to talk about. But, you know, if you're sort of gaming it out, conventional wisdom suggests, you know, the Chief Justice has voted twice now in prior big existential legal threats to the ACA to uphold the law. And so conventional wisdom suggested, you know, when Justice Ginsburg was on the court, still he would join those, you know, sort of block of four more liberal justices to uphold the ACA again. Now with her gone, you sort of have the three liberal justices. Maybe you assume the Chief Justice is not going to all of a sudden strike down the Affordable Care Act since he hasn't before, but you still need one more justice from the remaining group. And conventional wisdom suggests that that might be Justice Kavanaugh. So he could very well be the swing vote on the big ACA case. And I think that's something to watch. Folks like myself think that because of the way he writes about a doctrine called severability, which is really the idea of, you know, maybe the mandate is constitutional, maybe not, but does it mean the entire rest of the ACA or even parts of the ACA should still be struck down? He has written in other cases that the answer to that is sort of firmly no. You only get rid of the problematic provision and let everything else stand. So in theory, I think this should be an easy case given, you know, some of the prior writings, given how weak I believe the plaintiff's claims are, and conservative legal scholars agree with that as well. But we'll see. I think anything can happen, and we'll definitely be, again, kind of listening and watching for oral argument on the 10th.
And the point where it's so important is that a 4-4 vote upholds the lower court decision, which would not uphold the ACA, but a 5-3 vote in favor of the ACA against the lower court opinion would have this overturn the lower court opinion. And that's how it works, right?
That's exactly right. Even if it was 4-4, you're exactly correct. It would uphold the Fifth Circuit's decision. But what that would mean in practice, the Fifth Circuit had sent the case back down to the district court. So the litigation would actually continue. The ACA wouldn't be kind of out of the woods yet. You would keep going, and it would kind of drag this process out for at least another 2 more years.
Thank you. And
for fun.
Next question. No. I mean, it could quite frankly go on forever until somebody figures out healthcare anyways, really. I mean, it's sort of been somewhat emasculated in part under the Trump administration, but there are big parts of it, like the Medicaid waivers that remain in place, or Medicaid expansion, that are very, very important to a lot of people in a lot of states. So the Medicaid waivers have become very, very important. The other parts of the Insurance Act end up, it seems as it gets more and more emasculated, less and less people are covered by the other insurance plans of the ACA, but Medicaid expansion is very big. Fair
Medicaid
statement.
Expansion, yeah, absolutely. And I would point, you know, if we're talking about the entire ACA going away, which, you know, is, I think, an unlikely outcome, but is possible, you know, you would lose the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. You would lose changes to Indian Health Services. You would get rid of the biosimilar pathway at the FDA. You know, there's a million different things in the Affordable Care Act writ large. And so if you talk, you know, it's going to be impossible, I think, to unravel 10 years of this law being really entrenched in some positive ways and some negative ways. The other thing I would sort of point out that I always think is interesting is the Trump administration has really leveraged its legal authority under the Affordable Care Act to do a lot of the high-profile things it wants to do. So a lot of it's, you know, the things they're pushing on prescription drugs are authority they have under the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, which was created by the ACA. The big hospital and insurer transparency rules, those cite to a legal authority that they have under the Affordable Care Act. So it's, you know, it would be so disruptive, I think, to so many things and would actually then, you know, hinder some of the top policy priority agenda items that the Trump administration has worked on.
Fascinating. And just we'll talk for a second about the election in healthcare. Certainly a few years ago, President Trump made the analysis. He didn't have the votes to repeal the ACA. He sort of quietly in his own way sort of moved away from that fight. Talk for a moment about, or went about it other ways perhaps, but moved away from a direct vote to get rid of it because he couldn't have the votes. Talk for a moment about the election in healthcare. Just a couple thoughts there on what you might see and what we might see.
I mean, you know, it really depends, which is not the answer, but there could be a million different things that happen here. So I think if you have a status quo election, right, you still have President Trump being elected to a second term, you have Republicans in control of the Senate, I think you see more of the same, right? You sort of see more gridlock. You see the Trump administration trying to do, I think, with mixed success, what it can using executive authority. A lot of that activity has been shut down in court or it hasn't been implemented. You know, but I think we would expect them to push the same priorities around prescription drugs and transparency and kind of alternatives to the Affordable Care Act, that kind of thing. If you have sort of a Democratic trifecta where you have Democrats in charge of both chambers of Congress and Joe Biden takes the presidency, I think you could see some exciting things, but I think the question's really going to focus on the filibuster. I don't know that the Democrats win a 60 vote majority in the Senate. And so then it becomes, you know, how much are they going to be able to push through with budget reconciliation? Are they going to give up the filibuster? All of those questions that matter have huge implications for many things, but especially health policy. You know, if you don't have the ability to do regular order in the Senate, you can't do things like a public option, or you can't go big in the ways that they might want to. So you could sort of see more of the same, trying to tweak around the edges using budget reconciliation and then rolling back, I think, from an executive standpoint for President Biden, you know, rolling back a lot of the changes the Trump administration has put in place.
And so just one more question. If you're a health system leader today, you really have to wait till the dust clears to really start thinking about how this is going to impact a major health system, whether the Supreme Court or the election. You really have to sort of wait a while to see how, and then really see how aggressively, if the Democrats do win the House, the Senate, and the presidency, how aggressively they push forward on their agenda to see how this really has any impact on water health systems.
I think that's right. And I think because of all the uncertainty kind of across the board here, what I'm hearing from, you know, health payers included, you know, sort of health sector, is folks are just moving ahead, right? I wouldn't call it head in the sand, but I don't know how you prepare for this potential level of uncertainty. And so I think folks are just kind of operating with the assumption that we're going to keep, you know, the Affordable Care Act is going to stay in place. We're going to keep moving forward. Everything is advancing. I'm not sure what else you do. And I worry about consumers too and all of that, right? Of kind of the messaging to them,
really,
what does it mean for them, right? It can be so incredibly confusing, but I do think we're going to know a lot more in the next month and a half about where things could stand. But until then, it does feel impossible to make predictions.
And as consumers, at the end of the day, we're somewhat pawns to the entire system. I don't know how else to look at it, because if the Democrats do have a sweep and try and push forward for Medicare for All or public options like that, you know, we all know the insurance companies, unless they really see that they're going to lose that fight, will fight that so strongly at so many levels that will be a difficult fight and hard to do through budget reconciliation without the filibuster rules. And so a fascinating sort of, we are sort of pawns in this, I feel, as a consumer, and maybe that's a bad way to look at it.
No, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see, even if you have kind of a Democratic trifecta. You know, I don't know how, I think the Democratic base really does care about healthcare. It's a very motivating issue, but you have to wonder, are they going to prioritize COVID relief and racial justice and voting? You know, there could be a whole slate that actually comes up before healthcare in interesting ways, unless it's sort of directly tied to the COVID pandemic and the response there. So that's another thing to maybe think about as time goes on, as we sort of live through this pandemic and see what comes next. There could be priorities that actually come up above that, and where it doesn't make sense to maybe be as ambitious as folks were expecting. I think it'll all play out in very interesting ways. If I had to guess what I thought Democrats would do, I would probably turn to the bill that passed the House in June that was very much in the Affordable Care Act enhancement bill. It also included some of the prescription drug changes known as HR3, but it's, you know, making subsidies work better, extending them for different income levels, fixing the family, things that, you know, in a perfect world would have been done many years ago, because you could have had sort of a cleanup ACA bill, or you really would have built on it more. That doesn't have, you know, some of the more progressive things like the public option or, to your point, stuff that would really cause some big food fights. And so, you know, I think that's something to watch too. But I think the sequencing here is going to be really incredibly important. And I think hopefully consumers and voters and patients are all paying attention to what's going to happen next. But it can be really challenging to do that. As someone who tracks all of it myself, it could be really challenging, I think, for understandably, for your average everyday voter and folks who don't get paid to watch things as closely as we do.
No, 100%. Katie, I want to thank you for joining us. Just remarkable. Thank you very much for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast today.
No, thank you for having me. It's a great conversation.